Yeah, you're listening to A Life Insights Live with Scout Bartlett. Ooh, I like that part. I don't even know why. You know, I like that even better than we. Anyway. Yeah, you are listening to A Life Insights Live with Scout Like Pathfinder, Bartlett Like Pears. Good morning. Happy Friday to you. This is Friday the somethingth of something. January 2 is what I'm thinking of it, because it just seems way too soon for it to be February, doesn't it? At least it did to me. It seemed like we haven't had enough of January yet. Let's have January 2. God, it's February 10. Oh, Valentine's Day coming up. Great. Yeah, Kwong already knows the countdown to that. Yeah, you got big celebrations planned? Huge gifts, massive diamonds and things. That's it. Give her a Valentine's kiss. That's perfect. That'll work. That's all anybody out there wants. Yeah, so happy February 10th. Happy Friday to you. You know, it's sort of interesting that I actually took a look at stuff that I've been reviewing, and I don't have any reviews complete, so this morning there will be no episode of Bum 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 TikTok. That was it. That was the whole Tech Talk deal. Other than a repeat of last week's comments, the external hard drives that are out there, some of them with even automatic backup functions, are a very, very worthwhile adventure. And in fact, if you use your laptop a lot, that was one thing I discovered. I guess we are sort of doing a semi-Tech Talk. Want to do some music? Let's do some music. What the heck? We'll pretend that we actually are awake and know what we're doing. Tech Talk, San Francisco. We do need to get you to do that. I really like it. It sounds so like hip-hop when you do it. You know, maybe that's not trendy enough, but it's cool. Anyway, so portable hard drives, little bitty portable hard drives. And one of the interesting things I noticed, which was embarrassing that I didn't already know it, I put a portable hard drive on one of my laptops, one of my Dells. It's not a plug for Dell. It just happened to be that was the one I did. You know, if there's anything I plug or don't plug, it's that. Anyway, we'll not do that, because maybe they've gotten better since then. But the thing that surprised me is, one, the little portable hard drive is actually way faster than the built-in hard drive, enough to make a significant difference in response time. So there's one piece for you, although always with any of your computers, the first thing you want to do in terms of increasing its response time is take the internal memory up to its maximum. So if you don't know how to do that, just go down to your local geek store go down to the Geek Squad or whomever and have them do that. That's the first thing it'll do that'll speed up. But the access time on this hard drive, because I use this particular laptop to keep up with the website. And in fact, we've now gotten to where we can update the archive of this radio show to the website within about an hour after the show is over. So you can always go in and re-listen, or you can send your friends there if I said anything interesting, or for that matter, if it was just so funny that you want them, oh, listen to what he did here. But the portable hard drives, one, it's faster, and so the access, it's bigger than the hard drive that was in this little Dell, and it's faster, so the access time is way quicker, which is really nifty nice. But the second part about it is the key element. Backup. If you want to actually keep the stuff you're working with, back it up. That's the hint, okay? And that's the advantage of, you just grab one of these little portable hard drives. If you look around, many of them have a built-in software for backup. So that all you have to do is either do a computer click or a physical click, and it'll take it right into a backup function so that you don't really have to like, okay, what did I just do? Let's fix it. I've primarily adopted a practice of when it's important to me, when I save it on the hard drive in the computer, and then I immediately do a save as and save it on the portable hard drive as well. So that I've got a solid backup of the stuff that either I've spent a lot of time developing, or in the case of photos, where, you know, it's hard to go back and take that same picture again. So I would say that this was sort of a surprise for me, and there's lots of people out there that are more techie than I or earlier adopters than I that are going to be laughing at me for this. But portable hard drives, I now have one that I run on my laptop. I have a portable hard drive, well, it's actually a hard drive, an external dock that I can switch out the hard drives on, that's on my desktop so that I can run a big terabyte. Actually, I run two of them and I can alternate them and switch the backup because there's stuff that's important to me. But portable hard drives for your laptop, an external hard drive for your desktop so that you can, if your desktop should ever crash, you can take that hard drive. But make sure that you've got at least two copies of everything that you've either spent a lot of time on that's important to you or that's just important to you. Get yourself a hard drive, back up your information. And that's everything that we have for this morning's edition of Kwong. Kwong. Excuse me, Kwong. That's everything we have for this morning's edition of... Delayed Reaction San Francisco Tech Talk. too many things to do. Sorry about that. Ah, cool. So good morning. Life Insights Live with Scout Bartlett. This morning I'd made a note to myself that we wanted to talk about both the development of how I went from being an actual engineer to a trained and practicing engineer into the spiritual practices that I pursue now, as well as the development of the healing class. But I also want to mention two things, actually. One, I want to mention that if you go in, please go into Facebook and like the Life Insights education page. Just go in and like it. And then if you click on the everyone's comments, you're welcome to come in and add in comments to the show. Or if you've got a question, you can even put the question up on the Life Insights Facebook page. And we'll bring the question up on here. Oh, it's fun. The last thing that's up is, business meeting we had the other day, complete with snacks and me in my ticker shirt. So that's where you'll get some of the little inside stuff that's going on. And other interesting parts is you can go in and just like us on the Facebook page, the Life Insights Education Facebook page, and then you can add in comments or questions there. Or you can, this morning we'll actually let you phone in if you want to play on the air. No, that was not an offer of free readings at this point. Haven't decided on that yet, but... if you've got questions that you want to toss in, you're welcome to do that. So when I grew up in Kansas, the other comment I wanted to make is on Scout Bartlett's Facebook page. I just did a photo shoot in Muir Woods the other day right after it had rained and the light was incredible. So there's I posted a whole bunch of pictures, but there's probably at least eight of them that I really, really like. And that's always fun. So you can go in and check that out too. And that's Scout, like Pathfinder, Bartlett, like Pears, in Facebook. That's where the photos are. So, but if you want to comment into the show, you got to do it on the Life Insights page or I won't see it. When I was growing up in Kansas, which is not exactly the heartbeat of the spiritual, metaphysical, New Age community, and certainly wasn't when I was growing up there, or if it was, I wasn't acquainted with it. But as I was growing up, I describe it as growing up, I always knew that there was such a thing as that intuitive or psychic aspect of us. But I always thought that I was only thinking that, in the same way that you like to think that you're going to be some, gymnastic superstar or something. So I always knew in that gut feel that there was such a thing as intuition or psychicness, and that I had some of it. But I always thought that I only thought that. That was where my mind went with it. Now, my dad was an engineer. My brother's an engineer. I have an engineering degree. My granddad was in the technical field. My dad met my mom in a math class in college. It was a very left brain household. Not that it was an insensitive household by any stretch of the imagination. That's not what I'm saying. But it was a very left brain household. I definitely grew up knowing that where I was headed, once I got over the notion of thinking about being an orthodontist, I definitely grew up knowing that where I was headed was toward being an engineer. That was my expectation. That's what I did in school. But along the way, I had a number of experiences that validated for me that psychic stuff was really real and did really exist. But again, There was an argument inside. One part of me knew that psychic stuff existed, while the other part of me thought that I only thought that, as if somehow thinking that made, you know, think as if somehow if I did have that stuff, it would be what made me special, or for that matter, worthwhile, or whatever it is that we're really hungry for when we're a kid, which isn't necessarily that we need to be special, but boy, we sure want to think that we're worth the oxygen we burn. I guess that goes on as an adult, too. So as I grew up, there were a number of experiences. I mean, one that jumps to mind was I had a summer job in a factory, and it was interesting because it was totally coincidences that landed me that job in the first place, synchronistic coincidences, in a whole string of them. I was just randomly going to the little industrial park that was relatively close to my home, dropping off resumes, and I walked into this one place, and as the receptionist was telling me, no, we're not hiring, we don't do any summer hiring, some gentleman came walking through the lobby at that particular moment, stopped, looked me over. Now, I worked out and played ball. So I was a solid specimen of whatever I was, 16 years old. And this gentleman was walking through the lobby. He stopped, he looked me over, and he said, "He looks strong, hire him." And that was my whole interview. So I had this factory job for that summer, working in 100-degree Kansas heat in an unair-conditioned factory. It was a pretty interesting gig. But along the way, there was one other person that was there with a summer job. And then we only saw each other. It was an assembly line. One was not encouraged to go hang out and chat. There wasn't time. But we bumped into each other at the local public pool. We happened to bump into each other on an evening that I'd gone over there, and a rare evening she had, coincidences. We got talking, we got acquainted. I found out that she was engaged and that her fiancé had been given a terminal diagnosis, and, you know, at that point had been told he had some small amount of time to live, but that was months and months before. So he'd been told he had like 6 weeks to live, and that was 6 or 7 months before. Sorry, I got to give you the background. And that was kind of that. We, you know, waved and said hi when we saw each other at the factory after that. And a few days later, I woke up wide awake in the middle of the night, which when I was a teenager was a very rare occurrence, but I woke up wide awake in the middle of the night, and I knew that John had died. Now, odd parts are, remembering names is not my strongest suit, and certainly wasn't my strongest suit as a kid. So that I remembered that her former fiancé's name was John was a surprise. But it was weirder still for me to be wide awake and know that he had passed over. There was no doubt in my mind, none. And so when I got up the next morning to get ready to go to work, I just took out a piece of paper. Yeah, it's before cell phones. I took out a piece of paper and wrote down my phone number. And all I wrote on it was, "If you need to talk, call me." And I wrote my phone number and probably my name. And then I went off to work. And sure enough, she came in to work a little late and looking really worn, but she came to work, which is really wild. And I still was confident enough to, the first time that I walked by where she was working that day, I handed her this little note and just said out loud, "If you need to talk, call." And then went on about my job for the day, and that was it. Later, she did call, and sure enough, I was right. She had found out that John had passed over the night before in the middle of the night. I hadn't written down the time that I knew. She hadn't written down that I'm sure she knew what the time was when she got the call. So I don't know if I knew that John passed when he passed or if I knew that John passed when she found out. Doesn't really matter, does it? But that's the funny thing. Sometimes when they do quote-unquote science about intuition, they'll decide the parameters of the science, and so they might decide that, well, it's not psychic unless you knew when he passed over, because otherwise it's telepathy. So, I don't care, I knew. But the piece that most struck me at the time was I remember hearing the thought in my mind, and this was long before I started a meditation practice, so it was long before I was really hearing the thoughts in my mind, but I remember hearing the thought in my mind of, "There. Now there's no other way I could have known that, was there?" Yep. when it got validated, that was my first thought there, other than, you know, I had a lot of sympathy and empathy for her, but my first thought inside me was there. Now, there's no other way I could have known that, was there? Because I couldn't have read her body language, because I wrote the note before I ever went to work. I couldn't have known that he was due to die, because she didn't know that. She didn't know that he was in decline. She and his folks were not in the best of terms. So it wasn't like there was a cue, you know. He'd been the same as he'd been for 6 months. It wasn't like there was a cue. It wasn't like I could read her body language or hear it in the tone of her voice or anything else that we make up to try and pretend that somehow we're such brilliant body language readers that it's not really that we're intuitive, it's that we're body language readers. Because I remember the thought there. Now, there's no other way I could have known that, was there? Which tells me that prior to that, I had had numerous intuitive experiences that I had written off with some other explanation. This was the time, that's the first one that I can put my finger on that absolutely validated it. And we'll go ahead with some more of that history, but I want to let you know that I've been outdoors already. Even out in the suburbs, a jacket and a hat for my little naked head was enough. It wasn't really cold, but it was jacket cold. In the city, it wasn't even that cold. I had to open my jacket up a little bit. Sky was clear, some high clouds, so it looks like we're going to have one of those clear, beautiful days. But no matter where you are on the planet, no matter where on Earth you are, it's a perfect day for you to be having a great day on purpose. Hi, this is Scout, and you can have a private session with me, either a single session of self-understanding or ongoing development work for your spiritual path or unfolding the areas of your life that have been folded. We can work together individually, and I'm fully certified in all of the techniques that Christopher Howard uses in his groundbreaking Breakthrough to Success workshop, so that we can work even in those directions. You can contact me by phone as 925-676-5189 or email me scout@lifeinsights.net. That's scout@lifeinsights.net. Yeah, you're listening to Life Insights Live with Scout Bartlett. Wow. Ooh, I like that part. I don't even know why. That's right, you are listening to a Life Insights Live with Scout like Pathfinder, Bartlett like Pears. You can hear us on KEST 1450 AM, Personal Growth Radio, for over a decade, and KESTradio.com. But even better, our still under development, brand new website, ifidknownthen.com. Go in and click the button there, and it'll bring you right up, and you can listen to us live right on the web or through your smartphone. The only one we heard that so far we haven't solved yet, Kwong, this is a technical issue. So far we haven't solved yet. There's an issue with being able to listen to our streaming on iDevices. He says, no, there's not. Oh, you can't do that yet. Not there's an issue. There's no issue at all. You just can't do that. At least you said yet. I like yet. Yeah. As in, you know, it only took us how many years to get up on the net at all. Sorry, it won't work on your iDevices yet. But actually, I've had people on Droids have listened to us. So on your smartphone, if it's not an iPhone, you can even listen to us there. Go in and click on the link. So ifidknownthen.com. Is that cool or what? That's our new website. Well, at this point, it's our still in development new website. So it's still growing. We're still getting stuff there. God bless the business team and their patience. So there was the first experience I had that validated that there's no other way I could have known that. There really is a psychic stuff. It really does exist. It really does exist in me, and it really is happening. Now, from there, some of the markers get a little weirder. I was in a musical, actually, in high school, Hello, Dolly. And we had a cast party, as casts will do as often as possible. But this was after the run, so we had a cast party, high school kids. And for whatever reason, among other things, now this is one of those parties that had many momentous things. Like somebody in the neighborhood of where we had the cast party decided to be cute, and they went down the street and opened a valve on one tire on every car for everybody that was at the party. So that's sort of memorable that everybody at the party had a slightly flat tire, had one slightly flat tire. That's memorable. And there were some other parts that were interesting and memorable. Including one of the alums from our high school had gone on and performed on some relatively well-known stages, and she was back and came to the party. So, you know, a lot of notable events. But in the midst of this party, I know y'all don't want to hear all the details about my high school party, but in the midst of this party, we were playing this levitation game. And I don't know how many of y'all have ever done this. The game that we played, because I had never seen it before that night, somebody else came up with it, wasn't mine. One person sat in a straight back wooden chair. Four particular people, you know, whoever, but four specific people got around the chair, and they each put like two fingers, you know, they took one hand, two fingers, and put it under their corner of the chair. And to be scientific about it, first they tried to lift the person to see if they could lift them as it was. And then a whole group of us would be around in the circle, and everybody would gently lay their hand, you know, one person laid their hand on the person in the chair, one of the people in the circle around laid a hand on top of their head, the next hand on their head, the next hand on their head. So each person put a hand on their head, and then once it went all the way around and you had that whole stack of hands, you had a little bit of pressure on the head. Then it was a really fast thing for everybody to just in one smooth motion release the hands off the head, and the minute the last hand came off that person's head, so they were feeling a sense of lift, the four people around the corners of the chair would then lift the chair to see if it seemed like that person was any lighter while they focused on up. And a number of people had done it, and it had been like, you know, sort of debated of, well, yeah, we could lift her before and we could lift her after. It seemed like she was lighter. And I wanted to turn, so I got my butt in the chair. Am I allowed to say that? I hope so. I got my behind into that chair. I wanted to turn. Now, I'm 6'1", and I was 6'1" then, and substantial, and not your normal, you know, so I was bigger than many. And so four of the other guys in the cast got around the chair, because, you know, obviously we were going to pick the guys anyway. Four of the guys in the cast got around the chair, and each of them, you know, grabbed under their corner of the chair with two fingers and tried to lift me, and they could barely lift the chair at all with me in it. You know, I was enough that it was enough that, you know, I mean, they were only using two fingers of one hand, and they could barely lift the chair. And we did that whole circle of pressure on my head, and I'm really focused on up, 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 up. I don't remember exactly what I was focused on, but that's the theory of it. And we did the whole circle around, you know, everybody put their hand on their head, and they did the fast release of their hands on the head. And then the guys went to lift me again, and they braced to lift as hard as they had lifted the first time, and they almost threw me out of the chair. Because all of a sudden, when they went to lift the second time, they just, boop, lifted me right up to about at least chest, if not shoulder height. Okay, so we were down in, you know, Kansas, we have basements. We were down in a basement with an unfinished ceiling. It felt to me, because my eyes were closed, it felt like my head was up between the rafters. The interesting part was I could see the whole room and all of the faces through my closed eyes, but it looked more like a color photo negative, which I've had that experience. We'll talk about it later. It looked more like a color photo negative, but they lifted me right up, and there I was, and they just sort of like, they held me there. It wasn't like they lifted me up and then, you know, lost momentum and had to drop me back down. No, they just stood there holding me there, each of them with two fingers under one corner of the chair, holding me up at chest or shoulder height, like way up there. And then finally they kind of like got bored. Nobody knew what to do next. So then they lowered the chair back down. And I distinctly remember in my little 18-year-old brain of being surprised that when the chair went back down, so did I. But it wasn't like they put me back down as if I'd suddenly got heavy. You know, if it got really heavy and you put it down, it's going to slam down. No, they just sort of set me back down again. And I don't even know if we did anybody else after that. That sort of weirded out the room a little bit, which I've gotten used to later in life, weirding out a room. That sort of weirded out the room, I think. I don't even know if anybody else took a turn after that. That's interesting that I don't remember, because I was sort of stunned by that whole experience and it kind of wiped much of the rest of it. So, you know, a lot of years later, I'm by that time thinking that, well, maybe I made that up. Maybe it wasn't that big a deal. Maybe, you know, they just barely lifted me. Maybe I exaggerated. So I was at a not fifth year high school reunion, beyond 5 years. We'll put it that way. I think it was, God, I hate to even use these numbers. I think it was at least 20th reunion. Something like that. Some little tiny number like that. So I was, let's see, by your 20th high school reunion, you're what, 110 years old or something? Some number like that. It seems like that anyway. So I was at like the 20th reunion, and the night before the formal reunion was the fun reunion because we were all at a bar. And I happened to see one of the guys that was in the cast and had been one of the guys that was in the game. And I wandered over and said hi. And then I was just like, I was going to lead into it gradually to see if I was remembering correctly. Because like I said, there were a lot of things that went on at that party that were memorable. A lot of them. And I just said to Randy, he won't be offended. Nobody will know which Randy. I just said to Randy, I said, Randy, do you remember the Dolly cast party? And that's all I said. And he went, whoa, yeah, we couldn't even, it wasn't even like there was any lead in. It was like this was the whole party to him. He goes, whoa, yeah, we couldn't even lift you at all when we tried. And then all of a sudden we did all that. And then boop, we just lifted you up to here. It was like you weighed nothing. And for this reunion, they'd done it, you know, what have you been doing lately? And I figured I'd scandalize the Kansas people. So I'd actually written the truth about what I'd been doing lately. And they'd put out this whole little booklet of what everybody's, you know, what have you been doing for the last 20 years? Maybe it was 30. It was a lot. Anyway, and he went, whoa, yeah. He said, we couldn't even lift you before. And then all of a sudden you weighed nothing. And we just held you up there until it just like there wasn't anything else to do. So we put you down, but we could have held you up there for a really long time. He said, that was just amazing. I have thought about that a lot. I think about that all the time. And then I saw the booklet and I saw what you do. And I thought, oh, that makes total sense because that was just amazing. And I'm thinking, whoa, it did happen. It's not just I thought that something happened. It was the only thing that came to his mind when I mentioned that party. So even when I was still questioning whether or not that had really happened, I still had a real sense of, okay, this stuff is real and it's really there. While I was in university, somebody in the psych department decided to do a test to see whether or not psychicness existed. Basically, they had to run something. They had to do something where they could, you know, do an experiment and write a paper. And so that's the experiment they decided to do. And I spotted one of the signs for it out on the campus. And being interested in this stuff, thinking it really existed, but not being sure, I signed up, as did a bunch of folks. And we were basically just, you know, we were assigned to our group. And our group, because I guess they had multiple groups, three or four different groups that they ran, was told to show up at a certain campus building in a certain room at a certain time, you know, just be there. So we all show up. And the person that was administering it was done double blind. So he said, I'm only allowed a certain amount of information so that I cannot influence the results. Here's what I can tell you is that we're going to play a tape for you. It's sort of a relaxation tape, and we want you to just follow the directions in the tape. And at one point in the tape, we'll ask you to look for an image or a picture. And this was the place where he kind of tainted the experiment. This is Missouri now. Because then he said, even though he was supposed to be all science about this, then he said, and at that time, there's someone here in the St. Louis area who's reputed to be psychic. Yeah, that's real scientific. Thank you. There's someone here in the St. Louis area who's reputed to be psychic, and he or she will be focusing on a photograph, trying to transmit it, and we just want to see whether or not you pick up the picture. So just do what it says in the recording, follow along, and when the recording's over, I'll be back in the room. I'm not allowed to hear the recording, so I'll be stepping outside, but I know how long it runs, and when it's over, I'll be back. Okay, fine. So they play this recording that had us relax ourselves into a very deep state. It was my first introduction to meditation, actually. They play this recording that was a physical stress relaxation exercise, and then they suggested that we, you know, then in the recording, it had us create a white screen. This was before whiteboards. It had us create a white screen. And just let that screen be white and let whatever picture that flowed into it, float into it. So, all right, I'm laying on the floor because this is college kids. We all just sprawl all over the floor. I'm laying on the floor tracking along with this recording and it says, you know, create and just let whatever. And all of a sudden I notice I'm watching like a movie. And it's as if I'm riding in something, but all kinds of greenery around me and like a whole bunch, I'll call it a herd, of specifically collie breed dogs. So a whole herd of collies chasing along, and then as it developed in my mind, it developed as if I was riding in a carriage with this herd of collie dogs chasing along, coming around a roadway with all of this greenery around us, you know, lush green trees, and everything is greenery and collie dogs, and the carriage sort of added in. And then it was sort of like we came around a curve toward an antebellum mansion, a big white mansion. And about that time, my brain is thinking, this isn't it. Turns out I can't really do this. It's not real. There's just some dogs barking out in the quad outside the building. I'm just making this up. And I'm thinking that and letting it roll. And then right around then, the tape knew I was thinking that. And they said, okay, clear that out of your mind. Let your mind. They had us do a couple more relaxations and then create that white screen again. And now look again. And the second time I got what looked like a color photo negative. The colors looked reversed and off. And what I had was what I thought was two angry people in three-quarter profile. As I recall, to the left-hand side, I had a very angry face, all in red, in three-quarter profile. And then slightly lower on the right was another angry face, all in orange, and in three-quarter profile. And I could see the squinted eyes and the fierceness in these views. And the colors were all off. Again, you know, if you've ever held up, back in the days of film, if you ever held up and looked at a color negative from a film, the colors are weird. They're flipped and they just look odd to you as you look at them. But this is what it looked like. And it was crisp and solid and clear, but it was that. And my brain's thinking, wow, it's definitely not that. Okay, not really real, can't do that. Okay, fine. And then the tape brought us back out of the relaxation, and then the guy came back in the room. And he had six big manila envelopes. And he said, okay, here's the next phase. First of all, he had a bunch of paper, and he passed out the papers, and he said, what we want you to do is write down, you know, some contact material in case we need to get a hold of you later, and then just write down your impressions. There's two places, so write down everything you can remember of your first impression, and then write down everything you can remember of your second impression. And I wish I had known it would be important in my life. I would love to have a copy of that piece of paper. Because in the first box, I wrote out the whole description of the carriage and the antebellum mansion and the whole herd of collie dogs chasing after it. So I documented all of this, collies and greenery and carriage and mansion. I wrote it all out. And then in the second box, I actually sketched out where these two profiles were and described them as angry people and, labeled the fact because, you know, I was a science kid. I was used to writing up lab reports, so I was doing all the details. Right? So, you know, this face, three-quarter profile, red, angry. This face, create three-quarter profile, orange, angry, and sketched it out. And that's pretty much all I had to say about that. I was kind of assuming that was wrong. And then once we'd filled out all the paperwork so that nothing was influenced, he gave us time to do that. He just stayed separate. He wasn't looking at anything anybody wrote. And then he pulled out six big manila envelopes, and he said, I can't see these. So I'm going to hand them to one of you, and what I want you to do is y'all are sitting here on the floor. I just want the person that has them to, one at a time, lay them out on the floor where everybody can see them. Each one is numbered, 1 through 6. The envelope is numbered. Inside each is a photograph, and the photographs are numbered. And he said, so look at the photographs, and then what we'll want you to do is we'll want you to rate them, 1 through 6, as the probability that this photo was the target picture. Okay, cool. And I'm still have a part of me that thinks, well, maybe I really do have that psychic stuff. Maybe it really does work. Maybe there'll be like an antebellum mansion. Maybe that was what it was. And the person pulling out the photos pulls out the first photo, and I don't know what it was, but it didn't fit anything with anything I was looking at. And they pulled out the second photo, and it was a white Pegasus against a black sky. And I'm thinking, white mansion, white Pegasus. Maybe that's as close as I got. And they pulled out the third photo, and it was something completely other. Maybe it was like the New York, you know, Empire State Building or something like that. I don't really remember. And by this time, it's really funny. I'm a scientist. I can count to 6. But by 3, my brain is already saying, well, see, didn't work. I don't really have it. It's not really real. Always thought I did. It's not real. Look at this. 3 photos. None of them look anything like it. Well, gee darn. Now, you gotta remember, it's a little while since I was 18 or whatever I was by this time, 20. This is so clear in my memory because as they pulled out the 4th photo, my entire body went electric. And it was all I could do. It was all the engineering training in me to keep from screwing up their experiment because my whole body wanted to scream, oh my God, that's it. Of course, now it would be OMG, that's it. But they pulled out the fourth photo, and it turned out that I exactly had it, and I was wrong. So, you know, any skeptic could argue, except for the fact that, you know, if you're a decent scientist and you look at what I had put down, you could definitely identify the photo from that. They pulled out the fourth photo, and the fourth photo was not any angry people, nor was it an antebellum mansion. The fourth photo was a young guy down on one knee in a dark green, in a green background. They're in the middle of a whole bunch of trees and bushes and plants. They've obviously hiked out somewhere. Young guy down on one knee on the left side of the photo, looking to the right, so it's a three-quarter profile, squinting into the sun. So his eyes are squinted and his face is squinted, which could look like angry. And he's wearing a bright red nylon backpack. Next to him is his collie dog sitting, so slightly lower, faced off to the left of the photo as you looked at it, panting, so his teeth are showing and his tongue's out, which squints his eyes, wearing a bright orange nylon doggy backpack. Now, what had I seen? I'd seen a whole herd of collie dogs, and I thought a carriage, a whole lot of greenery, and I thought an antebellum mansion. Then I'd seen two three-quarter profiles, the one on the left higher, angry, I thought, but squinted in bright red, the one on the right lower, angry, I thought, but squinted with teeth showing, bright orange. There was no doubt in my little engineer brain that I had indeed seen this photo, so I have no idea what photo number 5 and photo number 6 even looked like, not a clue. I had a hard time because we were supposed to rate them 1 through 6 in terms of probability, and being the subtle person that I have always been, I wrote that photo next to number 1, circled it a lot, wrote next to it, this is the target photo, I'm only ranking the others because you've asked me to, and then I put the white Pegasus next and something else next and just, you know, wrote down the rest of the photos because I didn't care. And of course, at the same time, I'm thinking, yeah, maybe not, maybe I made it up. But the electric in my body was absolutely true that I knew. And sure enough, when they posted the results outside the library, as that's where things went in those days, each group got to find out which was their target photo so that you could find out how you did. And yep, sure enough, my group, the target photo was target photo number 4. The interesting part is that the person running the experiment had not done much statistics, so they only knew that you had a 50-50 chance of getting the target photo within the first 3 or not within the first 3, so they gauged the whole thing on a 50-50 chance out of everybody, where if you'd actually loaded the statistics, you would have given more weight if they had it as number 1 and slightly less as 2 and slightly less as 3 and so forth. There's a whole weighting system, and in fact, if I were doing the experiment, I would equally weight the people that had the target photo absolutely last. I would weight that as interesting, and then I'd gather the people that picked the target photos 1, 2, or 6. I'd gather those people and run it again and see what I got, just for grins. But, you know, they just needed a paper. So what they came up with was 52% of the people had the target photo in their first 3, and 48% had it in their second 3. Therefore, no conclusive evidence of intuition. And I'm thinking, you've got one piece of paper there that is absolutely conclusive evidence that intuition exists. And it certainly was for me. And like I said, I wish I had the paper. Vivid, vivid memory. That's the place where the door opened, because now I grew up in a left brain house. I was an engineer in training. I totally believed in double blind science. That was back before I actually knew about pharmaceutical research, which I still believe in double blind science. It's just that pharmaceutical research usually isn't. Frequently isn't. We'll just put it that way. Oh, that was so rude of me. If you want more on that, go to www.drsaputo.com. And you have to register, but it's all free. There's an amazing amount of content, including how research really works. But meanwhile, here I had double-blind, genuine evidence in my mind, not to doubt. Now, of course, that leads to the what the heck do you do with it, which was an unanswered question. But there I was in Missouri, and now I'd figured out that it really did exist, and I really did have some of it. And that either not everybody did, or not everybody could access it, or not everybody wanted to, or whatever else, I didn't care. You know, that's them, this is me. It really existed, I could really access it. Got to California, met my first teacher, Betty Bethards. Lots of you know her, knew her. Met my first teacher, Betty Bethards, went to one of her lectures, and every one thing she said, 5 things fell in place in my brain. It was a fabulous experience. And I begin to study meditation with Betty, and then with Dr. Carrie, I think she's Carrie Howard now, McCarthy Howard. But with Dr. Carrie McCarthy or Carrie Howard that worked with Betty, I studied mind science and focus. And from that, began to watch as my intuition emerged. And I was studying it for me. Now, I'll tell you the honest truth. I do readings, I teach classes, I work with people. That's how I spend my life. Really, lately, that's how I spend my life. And it's, you know, it's all dedicated toward the individuals that I work with and the students that I work with. They're opening their internal access so that it changes their external life experience. And all of that is a side effect of my continuing pursuit of my own growth. If I try to run it like a business, or if I try to think of it like a business, it gets haywire. The whole focus is my own internal growth, and everybody else is a side effect of that. The expansion of my consciousness and my awareness, the expansion of my energy state, and my understanding of how the world works, everything else is a side effect, and I share everything I learn as fast as I can share it. And there's nothing held back. I don't need to be ahead in the race. I'm working on it for me, so I do study with other people whenever I find people that have information that fits me. Frequently. So, I got to California. I started doing meditation. I studied with another man named Paul Larson, and I studied with Paul as well as with some of the people that joined the organization that he founded, Summit Workshops, which was originally Playground. Studied with those folks, any of y'all that know them. I also studied with a lot of other people. Gabrielle Roth has gotten more famous than when I studied with her. I studied with Patricia Sun. If you get a chance to go to one of Patricia's events, she's based here in Berkeley. Go, absolutely go. It's an amazing experience to experience Patricia's work. Patricia Sun. Regenesis, Mary L., I don't know, a gaggle of different healing modalities. Did a lot of work with Paul Larson's organization to clear the static out of my mind and make myself clear enough so that I could indeed pick up what was intuitive. So I started doing readings for people. A friend of mine, Shalimar Alexander, if any of y'all know Shalimar, bought me a set of tarot cards called Morgan's Tarot. Not Morgan Greer, but Morgan Robbins. Morgan's Tarot, and I met Morgan once and told him I'd been describing him as a drug-crazed hippie out of Santa Cruz, and his whole response was to say, Boulder Creek, really, but nobody knows where that is, so Santa Cruz is probably right. But Morgan's Tarot, Shalimar bought me a set of cards, and I started doing readings with those cards, and then it got to the place, because I couldn't play guitar, and I was shy and psychically sensitive, so parties were not an obvious game for me. So I'd take cards, thinking it worked as good as guitar. It doesn't. But it turned out people really liked the readings enough that people started requesting readings. Got in with a producer that was producing psychic fairs at the time and started doing psychic fairs, which gave me enough validation on my readings that people started paying me. And in the midst of that, I noticed that there was lots of foundational material that I was telling people in readings that was common to lots of them. So I decided that what I ought to do is start doing workshops, you know, send out a postcard to everybody, let them know I was going to be there, and then give all of that base foundational material all in one workshop. It was that engineering theory, you know, let's tell this part to everybody all at once, and that'll be more efficient. So I started doing these workshops, and we'll credit him. The gentleman named Neil McCarty started coming to the workshops, and I just adore some of Neil's comments. They were memorable. One of them was, when I do workshops, it takes people into a deeply altered state. And most of my workshops, you leave with less to think about, not more. You leave with lots to talk about, but less to think about, not more. Because stuff, like with my experience with Betty, when I do my workshops, stuff that's not been fitting together in your consciousness drops in place. It's like, oh, I get it, and it drops in place. So there's less to think about, not more. It all falls together. But it makes it kind of hard to, you know, it's like if we took it apart and gave you all kinds of pieces of life, that's very quotable. If we make life click together so it fits, that's not quite so quotable. So I can always remember Neil saying, wow, I've been talking about your workshops to all of my friends, and I tell them, you got to come. And they say, well, what did he talk about? And Neil says to me, and I say, it's just great. You got to come experience this thing. So I've gotten used to that along the way. But Neil started campaigning for me to teach a class. He would come up after every workshop and say, "That was a great workshop. I'd like to take your class." And I would say, "I do workshops. I don't do classes." And he'd say, "But I'd like to take your class." And after a while, he came up after one workshop and he said, "I'd like you to meet my friend." Yeah, what the heck? We'll just throw names around all day. Manette. "I'd like you to meet my friend Manette." "Thank you, Manette." "Manette has offered to host your class." So now you have two students and a place. "We just need a class." It's like, what? And then he got really clever and he recruited the woman I was going with at the time. And, you know, once you've got that, Kwong, you know that one, right? Yeah, yeah. If we recruited your wife, it's going to happen. So this was the woman I was going with at the time. And he recruited her and she started the class campaign. And then it was a given. So I'm going to tell you a little more about the healing class that came about. But I want to let you know right now, I've been outside already. And needed a good jacket and a hat for my little naked head out in the suburbs. It was actually less cold than that. I had to open up my jacket here in the city. The skies were clear. I could see some clouds and some stars, even at O Dark 100. So here in the city, it's going to be a beautiful day. But no matter where on earth you are, it's a perfect day to have a great day on purpose. Hi, this is Scout, and you can have a private session with me, either a single session of self-understanding or ongoing development work for your spiritual path or unfolding the areas of your life that have been folded. We can work together individually, and I'm fully certified in all of the techniques that Christopher Howard uses in his groundbreaking Breakthrough to Success workshop so that we can work even in those directions. You can contact me by phone as 925-676-5189 or email me scout@lifeinsights.net. That's scout@lifeinsights.net. Listening to A Life Insights Live with Scout Bartlett.
Good morning, Scout. Yes, you are the real deal.
I love that. Yeah, that's so cool. Thanks, Linda. Yeah, I am the real deal, as a matter of fact. It's really cool. Yeah, welcome back. Welcome back. So again, I want to let you know that we'll have this show, if you want to hear it again, or if you want to have, you know, get together with your friends and just point and laugh, we'll have this show archived up on our original website, which is lifeinsights.net, or the shortcut there is notscott.com. I know it all rhymes. That makes it harder to remember, but it's Scout, not Scott, right? Notscott.com. We'll get you into lifeinsights.net, and then click radio, and we'll have today's show archived up there, you know, by 10 o'clock anyway. It ought to be up. Depending upon the gods of technology and websites and so forth. But we ought to have it up there by about 10, maybe even 9. So you can go back in and listen again if you want to. Also, our new website is ifidknownthen.com. And when I'm on the air, the button shows up on ifidknownthen.com for you to be able to listen. Do we replay this show, Kwong? Does this one do a replay in the middle of the night, or do we not do that anymore? Huh? He says he doesn't know. I thought you were in charge of this stuff. I'll have to ask you that later. Used to be it's replayed in the middle of the night over the weekend, and I don't know if it still does or not. But anyway, you can listen to it. You can listen to it through ifidknownthen.com. We'd love to have you join. We'd love to have you. Do please send me an email so that we can let you know about our upcoming events. The healing class that I'm talking about, how it developed, we're going to be teaching that class. I'm going to be teaching that class in the city. It's starting right now in Aptos, over there on the coast, Santa Cruz area. It's starting right now in Aptos. I'm going to be teaching it in the city starting right at the end of April, the week of April 30th through May 4th, and you get to vote because we're either going to teach it in the city on Monday nights or on Friday nights. We don't know which yet. So that we're either going to teach it on Monday nights or on Friday nights, and you can vote for which of those you'd rather have. Now, class ends by about 9:30, 9:45. Well, figure 9:45. Class ends about 9:45. So those of you, I'll let you know if it's Friday night, it's not, "Oh, I'm too tired to go to class." It's like, "Whoa, cool, let's go do that energy recharge Friday night, and then when we roll into our weekend, we'll be cooking." Now, for those of you that party on Friday night, come on, nothing starts before 9:30. You know? It's not like, oh my God, if I go to class, I won't make it to the club on time because everything gets rocking by about 8. Yeah, right. No. It's been a long time since I've been clubbing, but I don't remember clubs starting at 8. More like 11 or maybe 10. You know, so if you get out of class at 9:45, you'll be all energized up. You won't need cocktails. You can just go out and grab yourself a club soda or something and just zing and rock and dance your night out. Trust me, it's really, really true. We'll have you flying by the end of class. So that's the Friday night thought. The Monday night thought is, okay, Mondays I'm not as tired. So you can cast your vote as to which one you'd like to enroll in. Diane, yes, I did get your message. Thanks. Sorry, it was a Facebook message, but it was a personal Facebook message, and I just figured I'd go ahead and answer it here. Meanwhile, so we'll be teaching it in the city, because the healing class, finally Neil talked me into doing a class, because he enlisted my girlfriend at the time, and so he gave me a place and a student. I really thought there'd be three of us, you know, my girlfriend, Neil, our hostess, Manette, four of us counting me. As it turned out, by the time I got the class announced, guidance was busy telling me you're only allowed to teach 21 people in a class at this point. And I was laughing because I was saying, yeah, right, I'm going to have four. Maybe we'll get a couple more. Maybe it'll be six. And as it turned out, that first class filled up to 21. It forced a second concurrent class, which I never expected, which also filled up. That second class filled up. And that did two things. The people in those first two classes wanted more advanced work in that energy material, and they told people about the class. So this was 1986. And this class has been continuously offered and is now taught by a number of people that have trained with me. And I'll just to let you know, this is no lightweight piece of material. If you really fast-tracked the training, it would take a minimum of 18 months to fully train to teach this class. Most people, it takes 2 to 2.5 years to complete that training. And most people study even longer than that. And then we have right now active two, we have three in the Bay Area, we have three advanced training qualified teachers that can do the advanced trainings as well. And that takes more than 2 years. Anyway, what I did when I went to write that class was I gathered up at that point, about 18 years of study about recognizing and allowing that core flow of life force energy. This is no psychic training. However, virtually everybody that goes through it notices that they have a greater access to their intuitive input. Not because we're teaching them how to be psychic, it's because we're taking the rest of the static out of the radio. You know, when they go design a radio and they make it a better radio, it's not because they figure out how to make it be a radio, it's because they figure out how to clean the signal and take the static out of it so that the radio is more tuned, so that you're not getting interference. All of us have a core flow of life force energy. And as we go through life, between trauma, drama, and karma, that core flow gets bent and constricted into patterns. And those energetic patterns, as I perceive them, they may not be real. It may just be how my mind interprets the intuitive data. But those core energetic patterns, as I perceive them, show up as all of the patterns in your life. If your relationships run 8 months and then they break up, or a year and 2 months and then they break up, or 4 years and then they break up, that's in those patterns. If you're closing off from the world right now, that's in those patterns. If you've reversed on yourself so many times that your life is reversing on itself and keeps scrambling up like, you know, broken eggs, it's in those patterns. It's all in the patterning. In fact, life is a reflection of the patterns. It's not that the patterns are a reflection of life, but that's just way deep. You don't have to believe in that. You don't have to believe in any of this. You have experienced that core flow of life force energy. If you've ever had an experience of feeling really strong and really good in yourself and then noticing that it bent and crumbled inside of you, that was that core pattern bending and crumbling. Well, not crumbling, but bending. And then, you know, it's like, once you bend a support beam in something, then, you know, it won't hold the same amount of weight it could hold when it was straight. So everything folds in on itself. Those areas in your life that have been folded. I love that part. We got to change the ad, though. Chris isn't teaching that class anymore, so I need to change the ad. Anyway, so what I did in the healing class I mean, for those of you that know that you're empathic or clairsentient, for those of you that know that you pick up information from other people and that it bounces you around, that you can be in a perfectly good space and walk into a room full of people that are tense and suddenly you're tense, you could look at this as I took 18 years of study in survival and thriving in a human lifetime, even while being psychically sensitive, and I put it together in a 10-week training. So that's a lot of what I do is sometimes it seems like I'm a sort of a slow learner. I take a long time to gradually figure things out, and then I figure them out slowly enough that I can take them apart and teach them much quicker than that. So you could look at it that way. This is a 10-week training that's 18 years of study. Okay? At that point in time. In fact, it's even more now. Looked at from a real-world place, this is 10 weeks of how to stand in your power, in your confidence, how to be able to come back to that state of confidence and knowing who you are, even after you get a button pushed, so that you can come back to who you are and come back and recenter quickly. You know, things that used to knock you out of place forever or for days, come back quickly and be back into that state of power. And we teach it in 10 weeks. We take that core flow of life force energy and all of those patterns and we retrain it so that your aligned state becomes your normal. And the patterns that you've been so used to that they seemed like normal become noticeable. And you've got a whole set of tools to come back into your own aligned state. We don't teach you to be like me. We don't teach you to be like anybody else. We don't try to tell you some ideal. We bring you into your ideal, your aligned state, and let that flow. In 10 weeks, we do enough healing that we unplug a lot of the buttons that trigger the patterns. And we give you a whole set of tools to be able to continue to come back to that. I have people that took the class in 1988 who still, or 86 actually, who still drop me notes periodically and tell me how they're still using those foundational tools together with the rest of the work they do. And we've got doctors, psychiatrists, psychologists, counselors, therapists, bodywork people, Reiki master teachers, other master teachers, Qigong artists using these tools as their foundation now. And that's our healing class, and that's where it came from. I'm Scout Bartlett. I want to remind you of two things. One, treat yourself as a loved one because you truly, truly are. Two, no matter where on earth you are, it's a perfect day for you to have a great day on purpose. I'll be back next Friday at 7. Tune it in.
Institute of Transpersonal Psychology.